This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Dead and Roasted. What can I get you?
Hey, have you played that popular indie horror game recently? Mortuary Assistant, I think it's called. Pretty creepy, from what I've seen YouTubers play. Well, prepare for the real deal today, because I've got a little story to share with you during my break about the absolutely disturbing encounter a real-life mortuary assistant had with the unexplained. Plus, I've got a few other stories sure to chill you to your bones. So I hope you brought your bone warmer. Actually, forget I said that. That sounded a little weird. These are tales from the break room. By the way, do you have a creepy work experience you want narrated on this show? Send it to me at eeriecast.com/submit if you want to be paid. But if you don't want to be paid, send it to me at darkstories.org. Chili Beans from Four Fears. I work for a coffee giant. No need to give more details than that. These two stories happened a year or so apart, and are two different kinds of scary. The first was on my way to work. I was sitting on the passenger side of the car, being driven to work about 6 minutes away from home. It's the same road I've traveled my whole life, and usually it's uneventful. On this route, there's one decently sharp hill going down to the main thoroughfare intersection that has entrances onto an interstate highway going east and west, along with three total lights spanning the hill, and the speed limit was set at 45 miles per hour. That day in particular was the beginning of fall, just when things started to change colors, but not chilly enough yet to fill that nice, crisp air. As we passed the second light, sitting at the top of the hill, I saw an almost indescribable sight. A motorcycle tipped over, and what looked to be the remains of someone, but also a large area of red splatter. No first responders had arrived yet, which sank my heart more when I heard in the following days what happened through a local bookstore. A new rider just learning to ride hit the brakes a little too hard, which sent them flying off in front of the bike, and the bike somehow ran directly over their head, crushing it entirely. Sadly, they passed away very shortly after. My heart sank into ice for the rest of the night, and to this day I can still see it when I pause to recall the story. The next crumb of creepy is also, you guessed it, on a closing shift. For this location, during the first couple of years I worked there, we closed at 10:30 or 11 p.m., and so the closing crew got really good at getting everything done at around 8:30, so we could just stand around and chat, tell stories, generally just horse around. On this particular evening, it was an oddly slow Saturday. We hadn't had a customer since about 8:30 or so. It was just me and a shift manager named Annie. The clock ticked to 10 p.m., and we hadn't seen hide nor hair of anyone in almost 2 hours. So we shut off the lights in the front, locked up, and Annie went to count the final till, while I did the small remainder of dishes we had. We both finished in about 10 minutes. We then gathered our jackets and personal things, getting ready to clock out. Out of nowhere, Annie says, "Crap, I gotta use the restroom before we go." I reply, "Sure, knock yourself out, I haven't clocked out yet." Annie rushes to the restrooms, which we had separate stalls each with a sink, toilet, vanity, and a locking door, which we propped open to let the opening crew know no one was in the bathrooms when we closed. The lights were on a motion sensor too. However, even if you swung the doors open, there would be a slight delay before a click and the lights were on. Suddenly, I see Annie, who's a pasty and very bright redhead in a teal jacket. She was darting back from the bathroom hallway in a panic. "I think there's someone in the bathroom," she huffed, genuinely scared. I gave her a once-over and told her I checked the stalls a while ago. They'd been clear, and no one had come in the store for hours. Adamantly, she persisted, saying someone was in there, and she added, "I can hear the water running." She then elected me to be the Ghostbuster by getting behind me and pushing me to investigate. We both finally made it to the farthest stall, and I too could hear the sound of water running. My heartbeat is thumping in my ears then. I finally mustered up the courage to open the door. I pushed the door handle down and forced it open, so ideally it would just swing open. To my unfortunate surprise, it does not swing open. Instead, it cracks enough that I can see the light is on, and the faucet is indeed running. This freaks me out. Then I realized what was blocking the door. The tall trash can had been fully wedged under the door handle so it would be jammed shut. At this point, we're both terrified. I rammed the door open the rest of the way against my better judgment, expecting someone hiding in the corner or even bathing in there. But no one is in there. It was just me and Annie. I went quickly to turn off the running water that ran so long the faucet was hot to the touch. I then peeked around to see if there was any further surprises. We both skedaddled right out after that. Come to find out some months later, while sharing ghost stories at our location, the same exact incident had happened to three other closing shifts after ours. We just never talked about it before the newest installment of our spooky stories.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Haunting at the Funeral Home, from Lady Mortician. I'm a 20-something-year-old female who graduated mortuary school in 2015. Now, I know what you're thinking. And yes, that is a job you have to go to school for. Shortly after graduation, I left my small hometown in central North Carolina for a job opportunity in a major city in Wisconsin. Living in a small town, we only had two funeral homes. Both family-owned and operated. And unless you're family, it's very difficult to get a foot in the door, so to speak. So not wanting my education to go to waste, I moved halfway across the country to start my apprenticeship as a funeral director and embalmer. Working with the dead never scared me. Up until then, I had never encountered anything spooky or paranormal. In fact, I found embalming to be very clinical, the quietness of the funeral home to be calming and peaceful. This particular funeral home I was working for relied on the apprentices for working after regular business hours, which meant being on call every other night and every other weekend. There were four of us, two pairs. You always went on calls with your apprentice partner. For privacy reasons, I'll call my partner Peter. It was probably January or February. Earlier that day, we'd gotten a decedent in, a homicide victim. This was not my first homicide case, nor my last, but one of the most memorable. The young man was an immigrant who came to the United States to start a better life. He'd worked at a nearby gas station at night while he went to school during the day. We all think we know how we'd react in a scary or violent situation, but you truly never know until you find yourself in one. A lesson this young man learned the hard way. He'd been working the night shift alone when two men attempted to rob the store. The only protection the clerk had was a baseball bat, and he'd been overpowered and beaten to death with that bat. To say his body was a mess would be an understatement. The reconstruction would take hours, even with multiple embalmers working together. Once the medical examiner finished their autopsy, the body was released to our funeral home. We were to embalm him, perform the extensive reconstruction work on his head and face, then have his body shipped back to his home country. I recall vividly how I felt walking into the embalming room that day to help the team repair this man's broken body. It's a feeling I'd never experienced before, and never again after. Walking in, I was overcome with this deep, visceral feeling of great sadness. I was almost brought to tears. The atmosphere was so heavy and sad. Peter could tell that something was up, because normally when I go into the embalming room, I'm usually very chipper, playing music on the radio, singing along, talking to the deceased as though they were keeping me company. Even when I went home for the day, I could not shake that somber feeling. That night was to be Peter and I's night on call. Around 2 a.m., the phone was ringing. It was Peter telling me that we'd gotten a death call, which meant we had to go into the funeral home and use one of the company vehicles to remove the body from the place of death. Half asleep, I pulled on my spare pair of clothes I kept sitting out for such events. Working in a big city, it's rare to go through the night with no calls. I slowly made my way to the funeral home. Being a southern girl, I'm not used to driving with 8+ inches of snow on the ground. When I arrived at the funeral home, I was surprised to see that Peter had not arrived yet. I thought for sure he would arrive before me. Luckily, I had a spare key, so I let myself in through the back door of the funeral home. Now, the layout of the funeral home is important to the story, so let me take a moment to explain. We always come in from the back entrance on the main floor. Also on the main floor are the chapels in the front of the building and the embalming room in the back of the building. Our offices are in the basement. The second floor is an abandoned apartment where the original owner had lived while he ran the funeral home. In order to get to the stairs that lead down to the offices, you had to pass the door to the embalming room, a large white industrial door with a lock and keypad entry system. So I turned on a couple of lights and I made my way downstairs to get clocked in and to collect paperwork that I would need to do our removal. I'm sitting at my desk working on the paperwork when I began to hear footsteps up above me in one of the chapels. Knowing that the building is locked up tight, I shrugged it off. It is a very old building after all. I then hear footsteps coming down the stairs from the main floor. So I called out to Peter to let him know I'm in the office. I waited a moment and received no response. So, still thinking nothing of it, I called out again. Peter? Knock it off, I'm in here. Come help me with the paperwork so we can hurry this up and get back to bed. I called out. Silence. 5 seconds passed, then 10. I started to get an uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach. I was then startled by my phone chiming. It was a text from Peter.
Sorry, roads are bad out my way. I'll be there soon.
It read. Reading those words, I felt my blood run cold. I knew what I heard. I knew I'd heard footsteps. Quietly, I collected my paperwork and I peered out the door of my office. I didn't see anything or anyone. My relief was short-lived, however. As I was making my way up the stairs to the main floor to load a stretcher into the van, the lights in the stairwell started to flicker. I noped the heck out of there. I've never loaded the van up so quickly. I waited in the van for Peter to arrive, not wanting to spend another minute alone in the funeral home. Eventually, Peter did arrive. We performed our body removal and made it back to the funeral home. Peter took the deceased into the embalming room, writing up their toe tags, then leaving them on the stretcher to be embalmed in the morning. I told Peter to go ahead and head home. I knew the roads were bad, and I would just have to go downstairs to assign the case to one of the licensed funeral directors and clock us out. As I headed down a few minutes later, Peter called out that he was leaving. I heard the door lock shut behind him. Peter had a bad habit of turning every single light off when he leaves, even when he's not the only one in the building. That night was no exception. Peter never left the lights on to the embalming room, though. Using the flashlight on my phone, I made my way to the stairs and started to walk up to the main level. I was two or three stairs from the top when I heard it. This absolutely gut-wrenching sobbing. It's the most heartbroken wailing I've ever heard. I stopped cold. That was not the voice of Peter. And besides, I heard him lock up and leave. As quietly as I could, I climbed the remaining steps. Without daring to even breathe, I poked my head out of the stairwell and looked around. The hair on the back of my neck stood up on end. Then I realized that not only is the light on in the embalming room, but that's where the sobbing had been coming from. My heart felt as though it was going to beat right out of my chest. My mind was screaming for me to get the heck out of there, but I was frozen in fear. Just when I thought things couldn't get any worse, I heard a loud banging coming from the other side of the big industrial door. This banging seemed to shock me back to reality, and I hightailed it to the back door. I fumbled with my keys trying to get out, the crying and banging continuing even as I shoved the door open and locked it behind me. I jumped into my car and took a moment to take a few calming breaths, trying to slow my racing heart. Once my heart rate was no longer at heart attack levels, I inserted my key and put the car into reverse. I could not stop myself from yelping when I heard my backup sensor begin to ding. Something, or someone, was behind my vehicle. I looked in my rearview mirror and nearly screamed. In the mirror, I see a black human-shaped mass illuminated by my taillights. I checked my backup camera display, and the shadow figure did not show up on that display. At this point, I was crying. I was too scared to get out of my car to check, too scared to even stay there and wait it out. I took a deep breath and decided to just go for it. I floored it, skidding backwards in the snow, through where the shadow had just been. When I looked up, the shadow was gone. In its place, I saw something I'll never forget. In the snow, there was one set of footprints. The footprints go from where the shadow person was and led to the brick wall, which formed one side of the embalming room. I've never driven away from there so fast. The following day, I called my boss and explained what happened. He's an older man who's been in the industry his whole life. His father owned the funeral home, as did his grandfather before him. He shared that he's had a few experiences of his own. He agreed to let me work out of one of our other locations until the homicide victim was shipped out later that week. My first day back to the main location was apprehensive, scared of what or who may be waiting for me. But when I walked into the embalming room, the air felt lighter, like a weight had been lifted. To this day, I still cannot come up with any explanation other than the young homicide victim was not ready to cross over and just wanted to make his presence known. Many people I've told this story to have not believed me, but I know what happened. There is more to life and death than can rationally be explained. Of that, I'm certain. The Wandering Man, from Anonymous. I work in a large manufacturing facility. There are around 3,000 or so people that work here on different shifts. There is a select group of us that get offered overtime on the weekends, but the majority do not, so the buildings are all empty. One weekend, I was working the night shift and didn't have much to do, so I got bored and decided to take a walk around. Man, how I wished I wouldn't have decided to take that walk. I went walking through the other buildings that were relatively dark, with only the occasional motion light coming on here and there. So I'm wandering around, getting bored again, and decided I'll go to the cafeteria to grab a water from the vending machine. Once I get to the vending machine, it's out of waters, so I decided that I'll go to the cafeteria in the other building. There's a hallway between the two buildings, and for some reason there's not any lights that come on when I'm walking through. So at that point, my only light was coming from the red emergency exit sign. I can see well enough, so I walked on through, and as I'm getting into the other building, I noticed it was pitch black. Here, there were no lights coming on, and I couldn't see anything. I pulled out my phone for the flashlight and decided to keep going through the building. I got about halfway through the building, then my phone died, so now I was just standing in the pitch black with no light. As I'm standing there trying to figure out what to do, I began to hear a voice. I couldn't make out any words, but I could definitely hear someone talking. I thought this was someone on maintenance coming through to look at something. I yelled out into the dark, "Hello?" And I got no response. My voice echoed through the building as if I were on top of a mountain yelling out. Panic began to set in as I realized I'm stuck here. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed a dim red light. I thought I'd caught a glimpse of an exit sign illuminating my way out. I started to try to slowly make my way over to it. Then I hit my shin on something. As I'm standing there holding my hurt leg, I realized that I should be too far into the middle of the building for there to be an exit sign anywhere close. I started to look for the red light again. I couldn't find it. It was like it had disappeared. Frantically, I tried turning my phone back on, but no luck. I began moving very slowly in the direction I thought I last saw the light. As I shuffled my feet, barely moving, I heard a voice again. Except this time, the voice was close enough to hear what it was saying. I stood terrified because I thought the words had said, "This will be your eternity." I panicked and I began to yell out, "Who's there?" But again, I heard nothing. Then I caught a glimpse out of the corner of my eye of the red light again. Except this time, it was in the opposite direction of where it was before. I went ahead and started making my way to that light. Somehow I managed to get back to the dark hallway I'd walked through in the first place. Then I quickly got out of the building and back into my well-lit building. Finally, I was able to calm down. I sat down and thought, what was that other red light I saw? It was a good bit before I ever saw the exit sign light. And who was in there talking to me? The Phantom Traveler, from Harley C. I'm in my early 20s. I'm a CNA in the Pacific Northwest, specifically the Panhandle of Idaho. I'll leave the facility's name out for privacy reasons. This is the story of one of the most terrifying moments of my career, while working with life and death every day. This is why I'll never work in a hospice again. It's the story of when I encountered a Phantom Traveler. It was the end of 2019 and the start of 2020. I just finished getting my advanced CNA from a local college. It only took me a couple of months and it was quite the fun class. While I was finishing up my studies, my teacher let us know that an agency nearby was hiring. For those of you who don't know, an agency in the medical field is a company that contracts workers to facilities who pay for their service. If you work for an agency, you tend to make more money than if you work at a regular facility. I went online and began looking for jobs, and to my surprise, I found the agency that my teacher had mentioned, and they were hiring at $23 an hour. They were based out of Washington, and living on the border of Idaho and Washington, I thought this was a great opportunity. I could get Washington pay, still living in Idaho, which was a lot cheaper. So I jumped on the opportunity, and about 2 weeks after graduating, I began to work for them. The first place I contracted to was a specialty hospital that was a short-term care facility. The hall I was put on was the ICU hall and the hospice hall. The ICU was the intensive care unit where there was always something to do, and it was constantly busy, while the hospice hall was a little more somber. Hospice was people waiting out their final moments that could range from minutes to months. This hall consisted of people who were conscious and some people who were so ill they couldn't recall what they had for lunch that day. For some reason, I felt compelled to stay in the hospice hall. I can't tell you if that was out of compassion or pity, but to this day, I wish I'd never made that choice. Now, I've had some supernatural encounters before as a child, and I'm no means sensitive to that kind of stuff, but I was aware that there was more out there than what you can see in everyday life. After contracting to this specialty hospital, I had a nice looking resume and decent references from it. So when the time came for my contract to end and to start somewhere else, I was able to get a nice job working a mid-shift from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. at an assisted living facility. It also had an ICU and hospice hall. I thought I struck gold. The facility was close to me and had the patients I was most familiar with. Little did I know, after working here, I would be pushed away from the profession entirely. When I began working for this company, it was around mid-November of 2021. For those of you who have spent time in the Pacific Northwest, it gets dark here very fast in the winter seasons. Not only was it dark, but I also joined the medical field during the height of COVID. I know, I'm so smart. Around 5 p.m., the sun would start to go down, and it was dark by 8 p.m. on good days. That year, it was a particularly dreary winter. Thick clouds and fog always filled the sky, shutting out the sun at every angle. Due to COVID, the hospitals in our area were always full, and patients were being moved around all the time. Even though I only contracted to facilities for a month, I still saw a lot of people come and go in each place I worked. One day, our front desk was notified of a new transfer coming in. They would be staying in the 400 hall. With my luck, that was the hall I was contracted to. When reception notified me of this, I thought to myself, great, another new patient for me to get used to. Working as an agent means I was always moving around and always getting to know new people, which took a long time. By the time I was used to the resident, it was time for me to move on because my contract had expired. I was stationed on the end of the 300 hall and was also responsible for the start to midpoint of the 400 hall. Due to the lack of staff, I had way more patients than anyone should have. Matter of fact, all of us did. That day I was notified of the transfer, I went about my day as usual. Thankfully, this transfer was coming in during the facility's lunchtime, so that meant I could get her room ready while all my residents were eating. For privacy's sake, I'll call the transfer L. Recently, the facility had hired a new NA and assigned her to shadow me so she could take over my hall when my contract was over. I thought this was a great opportunity to give the NA a rundown of how to set up a room for a new resident. Let's call the NA Kate. Kate and I got the room cleaned up and set up her area per usual protocol. Make the bed, clean the floors, sterilize any and all surfaces or contact areas. That's when my radio went off with the front desk saying,
"Hey, your new transfer is here."
With that, I made my way up to the front desk, introducing myself as I pushed her in her wheelchair down the hall to her room. As I made my way down the hall, I asked her to tell me about herself. She simply stated with a smile,
"Oh, hi there, honey. I'm Elle."
This was a good sign to me. She was open and eager to talk, which would make my job easier. I introduced myself and said, "Well, hi there, Elle. I'll be taking care of you for a while, and so will my assistant, Kate." I nodded my head in Kate's direction. She gave a nervous smile in Elle's direction. I continued to chat with Elle until we reached the room. She was listed as a Hoyer, so I instructed Kate to go grab one so we could get Elle in bed and let her adjust to her new environment. Kate scurried away to find the machine, and that just left me and Elle alone. To help pass the time and to hopefully get to know my patient better, I asked, "So what brings you over to my neck of the woods? I saw your sheet, but there was no standout reason I saw for you to come here. Did you just get tired of the other facility staff?" I asked in a joking manner. She simply looked at me and said quite plainly,
"Oh, I never stay anywhere for too long. Just so you know, it's Larry who is to blame for me moving around all the time."
Needless to say, I was intrigued. "Who's Larry?" I asked, still in a lighthearted tone. Her expression changed to that of something more somber. She lowered her voice and said,
"Well, honey, Larry is the ghost who follows me. He's been following me for about 3 years now."
My expression went from friendly to slightly concerned. I remembered reading on Elle's chart that she had been listed for possible schizophrenia or early onset dementia. This is what I used to rationalize what she had just told me. After that, Kate burst into the room with the Hoyer, and it broke my concentration on this so-called ghost that was following Elle. I got her into her bed shortly after Kate arrived, then excused myself to go check on my other patients, seeing as lunch was now ending. My day went on as usual, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking about Elle's story. That day was an unusually cold one. We got snow for a couple of hours in the morning, only to have it warm up just enough to rain for a little bit, then go right back down to freezing weather. When it rains after it snows, it creates a thick layer of ice everywhere, making it unbearably cold. Lots of our residents called it an early night, and honestly, I couldn't blame them. It was cold in our facility, and while the residents got to crawl into bed under sheets with as many blankets as they needed, I had to walk the dark, cold halls making sure everyone was okay before my shift ended. I finished the nighttime rounds around 9 p.m., about an hour before the night crew would come in to relieve us. Seeing as I was able to finish my charting earlier than expected, I had about 45 minutes to kill until I could leave, and that's if the night crew actually showed up on time. I decided I would just peek into my rooms and see if everyone was asleep, or if someone needed some final bits of help before I left. Having wrestled in high school, I stood up on my sore and beaten knees and groaned a little as I got up. The cold weather wasn't making me feel any better either. I made my way to the end of 300 Hall, and with my luck, that was towards the end of the building. Now, I've walked that hall many times, both day and night, and I've never been creeped out. Sometimes I would get a little unsettled at the sound of a resident moving, which would suddenly break the dead silence of the building. Between my shoes giving off a slight squeak as I walked and the EKG machines, it was just like every other night, until I felt something different. Suddenly, and without warning, I got a bone-chilling feeling, quite literally speaking. I suddenly got so cold, it caused me to get goosebumps, and it made every joint in my body ache. At the same time, I felt as if someone was watching me. I know it's pretty cliche, but that's what it felt like. I was getting more unnerved, which was uncommon for me, and I was to the point of picking up my pace to try and outrun my unseen assailant. I was about to break into a full-on run, but then I jumped when I heard a sound right near my ear. The sound of me stepping in water. Oh God, I thought to myself, assuming that someone had flooded a sink or a toilet. I looked up at the room to see it was Elle's room. I glanced at my watch, seeing it was now 9:45 p.m. I have enough time to clean this, I thought to myself, as I slowly opened the door. I glanced around the room, seeing that everything there was normal. As I looked, I checked off everything in my head. Bed, bathroom, windows closed, wheelchairs bedside. I continued looking until something stopped me in my tracks, or rather, someone. Before I could glance over to the machinery, I noticed by her sink, each room in the facility had two sinks per room, there was a shadow, one that looked too much like a man. Now, visiting hours were far past finished, and I had no idea how someone would have made it past the front desk and all the way here. I assumed it was a resident who had wandered into the wrong room. Many do have dementia and roam after dark. Seeing as this was an invasion of Elle's privacy, I made my way over to the figure to take him back to his room. As I walked, I noticed my feet were stepping in more and more water. Once I was far enough in the room, I could hear the sink running. It was overflowing and spilling out onto the floor. A little annoyed that someone went out of their way to turn on a sink and flood it in my hall of all places, I started to try to get the man's attention by whispering to him, "Excuse me, sir." His head looked up a little. "You are in the wrong room. I'm going to walk you back to your room and we can lay you back down for the night. Does that sound okay?" I couldn't see his features too well, but I could make out his silhouette. He was a taller man with a bit of a belly and was wearing what seemed to be super tight clothes. The man lowered his head back down and said in a growling-like tone, "I can't go yet. Too much to lose. Too much to take back." This made me confused, to say the least, but I was guessing it was the ramblings of a sick old man. I said, "Okay, buddy, let's just get you up." I went to put my hand on his shoulder to guide him out. As I was doing that, I realized I had never gotten his name. I looked down at him, trying to meet his stooped level. "What's your name, sir?" At this, he looked up at me fully and replied, "Larry." I froze. I could see the man's face better now. He was normal looking, except for the fact that he was soaked from head to toe. His skin was pale and slightly blue. I now recall when he told me his name, it almost sounded like he was speaking with gargling water. Some kind of trance came over me, and I was frozen in place, absolutely terrified. I couldn't move or speak or blink. I stood there for what felt like a few minutes, just watching Larry sit in silence. The longest few minutes of my life. The only sound breaking the eerie silence was of running water hitting the floor and my own heartbeat. Out of the blue, I felt a hand on my shoulder. I whipped around like I had just been comically punched. It was Kate. She was looking at me with a weird expression. The night crew is here just so you know. I was gonna leave, but I noticed you were not back yet, and you didn't have your walkie. She was right. I had totally forgotten it. I reached down to where it would be and caught a glance of my watch. It read 10:33 p.m. I looked back at her and quietly exclaimed, I've been here for almost an hour? Kate looked confused and responded with, Yeah, the night crew got here late, and I just assumed you had a big mess to clean up or a bed to change. When I came to get you, I heard water running and I saw you at the sink, so I thought you were rinsing something out. I had forgotten about the sink, the water on the floor, the soaked man sitting behind me. I turned back around to see the sink was now off and Larry was nowhere in sight. Matter of fact, all the water I'd walked through was no longer there either. There I stood again, confused and concerned, and a little shocked at the sudden change. Not wanting to be in that room anymore, I thanked Kate for grabbing me and walked with her back to the front desk. Before I left, I closed the door slightly, only to catch a glimpse of a man standing in the corner, dripping wet. Eagerly, I clocked out and drove home in complete silence, completely rattled at what I had just seen. I got home, and the thought of showering did not appeal to me. The thought of water at all didn't sound nice. I sat there all night, not sleeping a wink, trying to process what happened. Am I crazy? I thought to myself. To satisfy my curiosity, I began to read up on unexplained encounters over the next few days that other people have had. This led me down the rabbit hole of paranormal stories. From what I can tell, my experience could have been with a poltergeist, a spirit that attaches or follows someone around, usually due to an unjust killing or tragedy. It could also be a demon in disguise, but this one didn't seem to fit the bill. With this information in mind, I decided to look into deaths in the area. What I found made me tear up. I came across an article from 2018 about a wife who had murdered her husband at a lake not too far from me. She embezzled money from his credit union and pushed him overboard after giving him a massive amount of Benadryl. His cause of death? Drowning. And his name? Larry Eisenberg. I have no guilt in sharing this information because it is public and stories have been written about it. If you want to read it yourself, you can find the stories online from local news sources. As for what Larry was doing following around L, I have no idea, and I don't really want to know. I finished out my contract and made sure to never be in that room after dark. I never had any other experiences as vivid or direct as that one, but on occasion people walking the hallway would hear the sound of water dripping and what sounded like moist footsteps. Before I left, Kate swore she saw someone in Elle's room just standing there, then vanishing in the blink of an eye, and I do believe her account. Shortly after my contract ended, I left the line of work and haven't gone back to it, opting to get my degree in nursing earlier than I'd planned. I don't know what happened to Elle, but I see why she was being moved around so much. If this was my first encounter with her and Larry, then I could only imagine what repeat ones would have been like. I've never had another experience like this, and I'm glad. But to this day, the sound of water and the view of the lake Larry was killed in brings me back to that night, back to seeing this phantom traveler. Tales from the Break Room is a viewer-submitted podcast featuring allegedly true scary stories that happened on the way to, on the way from, or at work. If you want your story to be narrated on the show, send it to us at eeriecast.com/submit. As of April 14th, we're paying 3 cents per word for stories that are approved and make it onto the show. Submission does not guarantee approval or payment. For a limited time only, PayPal only. Tales from the Break Room is an Eeriecast Network original podcast hosted by Darkness Prevails. You can follow him on Twitter at Dark Prevails, and you can hear thousands more stories read by him on our other show, Unexplained Encounters. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow and rate Tales from the Break Room on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can also enjoy plenty more horror-themed podcasts at eeriecast.com.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.